Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for UFC Fight Night, Whitaker vs. Gastelum, with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
the MMA Guru, back again for UFC Vegas 24 or UFC on ESPN 22. The full card is going to be free on ESPN. I mean, this main event is pay-per-view worthy. It was going to be a pay-per-view, mind you, just February of 2019. And I cannot wait. I am on pins and needles.
Man, this is going to be one hell of a fight night. Even in the co-main event, you got a couple of really well-known names. Jeremy Stephens, he's been around forever. Drucker Close. You got Andre Arlovsky. You got Jacob Malkoon. All right, I'll stop.
Jacob Malkoon, that's the people's main event right there.
We could see plenty of entertainment all throughout the card. Extremely excited. There's a couple of fights even on the prelims here that I think could be main card worthy on certain nights. So
this isn't my favorite card from a betting perspective, but it is one of my favorite cards in a while from a viewing perspective. So I really can't wait to break this one down with you.
Should be a great time to get us started.
It always is.
To get us started, Tony Gravely versus Anthony Berchak. We have a veteran coming in, facing a guy that's, really getting his feet wet in the UFC. However, Tony Gravely does hold a little bit of an experience edge over Anthony Berchak. Gravely, 5 years younger, 29. He is going to be 3 inches shorter. But, Berchak doesn't hold a reach advantage. They're both at 69 inches. Nice. But, nice. We see in the UFC career, Tony Gravely 1-1. He does have one decision win. We saw in his last fight a split with De Freitas, and he has a submission loss. Something that's also interesting is that he does have four other submission losses on his career record, and Berchak does have 7 career submission wins. Now, none of those are coming in the UFC. He is only 2-3 in the UFC. One knockout win, one decision loss, one knockout loss, and 2 submission losses. So it's pretty tough for Berchak out there. And, I think he's going to run into a tough test here.
I couldn't agree more. Berchak, this is his second UFC run. He's kind of lucky to get this second run and went over to Ryzen after his, which actually ended on a win, which is kind of weird. Then went over to Ryzen where he lost 3 straight, ran over to Combate after that where he won 2. I don't know. He hasn't really shown me too much. I certainly don't want to take him in this spot. I know some people like a quick little dog play. They see some juicy odds. I don't see this as the spot. Gravely's pretty impressive in terms of his wrestling. I know his distance striking is kind of suspect, and he doesn't really have too much of a finishing ability in that respect. And you're totally right. He's been subbed like 5 or 6 times, and that's like not ideal.
Yeah, it's unconscionable.
But I don't know that that's really going to be a thing here. I mean, I guess anybody can get caught on a rear naked choke, right? But not where I'd place my money. I do like Gravely here. The spot I found that I really do enjoy is Gravely round 3 or decision plus 140. So it does kind of give Gravely a chance to wear down Berchak. And we've seen Berchak get finished before by Gustavo Lopez. And he was also finished by Thomas Almeida pretty brutally. I really do think the decision is the most likely play. But I kind of like the round 3 prop a little bit too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think a lot of what we've seen from Berchak in the UFC as far as his losses go are that he can get overwhelmed on the feet. And his first submission loss in the UFC, he was winning with some ground and pound and got caught in a heel hook by a heel hook specialist, Entwistle. So it was a little embarrassing, but you can understand a guy making his debut could let up a mistake like that. But he does have a black belt. He does have a wrestling background. And I think that he could do enough to survive here, given that this is his second run. And he does seem to have learned a little bit. He did face a guy in Gustavo Lopez that was his teammate in his last time out, so that might have made him a little bit more tentative. He definitely didn't look like his normal aggressive self his last time out. And you saw that Lopez was able to get the submission because he rocks him on the feet first and is able to take him down thereafter and really control him. I don't see Gravely necessarily bringing that threat on the feet, so I'm going to stick with the decision, I think, here at plus 195. Just a little play on that one because I do think Gravely wins. He's probably going to be part of a parlay for me. I'm going to have to see who I feel most comfortable with after the weigh-ins just to make sure there's nothing dramatic happening or fights canceled. And, so I do really like Gravely to win in this spot.
And, yeah, plus 140 if you want to get a little sprinkle back on round three. You cut a little bit out and you get a chance at a finish just in case it happens that round. But you really can't hate the full decision play because Gravely doesn't really get many finishes.
Yeah.
Finishing Ray Rodriguez, who's no longer with the company, is doesn't show me much.
That's
supposed,
right.
You're supposed to finish that guy.
Yeah. So let's get right along to a fight that we probably shouldn't spend too much time on because compared to our opening fight, this really just isn't that high level. You have Zara Farron coming off of two consecutive losses in the UFC against Josiane Nunez, who's going to be making her debut in the UFC. You look at their career wins. Farron has 4 knockouts and 2 decisions. Nunez has 6 knockouts and 1 decision. So for me, a little bit earlier in the week, I said, you know what? I see, you know, some finishing potential. Let me take a peek at the line because I know that this fight isn't necessarily high level. The line's pretty close. You got Farron at plus 104 and Nunez at minus 122. I just find it interesting that someone just fought, you know, someone that was contending for the title, you know, is going to be priced as the underdog here against someone making their debut. And a huge size difference, you know, Nunez, she's got heights listed all crazy, all different places. But when we see them line up, you'll see how big a difference there really is.
I, once again, could not agree more. I see Nunez is a small, short, probably the shortest in the division. She's just going to crash forward and just try to strike and smash with pressure. And while that may get knockouts and while I guess it's possible, you know, she knocks this girl out as she's been finished by Felicia Spencer by ground and pound. I think Felicia Spencer and even Megan Anderson, who I think gets a lot of flack and hate from the fan base, which I think is really not cool. And I think Megan's awesome personally, but that being said, I really do like Farine here in terms of you really can't take it's really it's dog or pass. And it's really should probably be pass, but I do like Farine here. That KO prop is not terrible. And decision plus 125, which is probably the more likely route. It could be like a bull and a matador type situation where the person with the longer range, you know, plays that game.
Yeah. So fight not to go the distance plus 108. I already made a little play on that. Just a little one. I couldn't help myself. If you wanted to add a little more juice to it by knockout is plus 200. Cause I don't really see a submission either way here. So I think I'll leave it at that.
Oh, and I'm sorry that was the prop that I had written down. It was Farin by KO or decision. It's both of them plus 125.
There you go. That adds a little more value too. If you don't feel
and
like
it gives
playing
you a little
aside,
protection,
you know,
a little safety.
Yeah. No, that's not the worst idea for a fight that you know.
You probably shouldn't be betting in the first place.
That's right. Yeah. So you know, follow our advice at your own risk on that one. I will say.
Moving right along.
Yeah. On to the next, we got Austin Hubbard versus Dakota Harry Bush. that is his chosen nickname.
I love it.
It's pretty,
I mean,
great.
Not exactly. I don't love a Harry Bush, but I think the nickname is funny.
Well, whatever your choices are in life, that's up to you. I mean, you know, I'm sure we can maybe talk to Manscaped if they want us to talk more about Harry Bushes. So,
definitely.
getting down to the matchup, you know, this is a late replacement. Not able to really get too much tape in on Bush here. And, you know, Hubbard is not the highest level. You know, when it really comes to the UFC, his wins came over a couple guys that I don't believe in the UFC anymore. And then, You know, his losses have come to some decent names, but, you know, I just don't see a play on this fight for myself because, you know, the line's kind of close here, and I think some people might have a side on it. I admit to not having a play here.
Yeah, he infamously won that fight against the guy that quit after the second round, and then the UFC cut him. And I also see that he seems to have a problem with high-level grapplers and wrestlers, right? Mark Madsen is an Olympic-level wrestler. Davi Hamosh is an incredible wrestler. And Joe Selecki, we just watched him last week wrestle, grapple, and have top control over Jim Miller for two rounds. So we know that those are not necessarily the worst losses. And by the way, we haven't seen Madsen since, right? Because he got his jaw broken and he's like 40.
Yeah, sure round three, he really put a hurting on him, thud.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to come back eventually, but like we haven't seen him. And in all fairness, I don't know much about this Harry Bush guy. I know he beat Austin Clem in round one LFA. You know, I don't know. Losses to Jaleel Willis. Certainly not going to play Hubbard. I mean, certainly not going to play Bush. And tough to play Hubbard. So, by the way, FanDuel doesn't even have props or lines up right now. All I have is a DraftKings money line. I don't have anything. I don't have props. I have nothing.
Yeah, and you know, in the sake of, you know, speeding things up here, I'll just say, you know, maybe I'll take Hubbard if you ask me to really pick, but I'm not going to recommend a money play here.
No, just kick back, enjoy this fight, save your money for later.
It should be a fun decision.
Or even next week, which has got three title fights.
Yeah, so actually moving on to somewhere where I do have a pretty strong read and play here, Bartosz Fibinski versus Gerald Meerschaert. Man, this could end up being a pretty one-sided affair if either guy gets what they're looking for, because Fibinski provides zero on the feet. They match up pretty well in size. Meerschaert is going to have a one-inch height advantage, 2.5-inch reach advantage, and he is going to have a big striking advantage because I just really don't see Fibinski being able to provide anything rather than a couple little setups to get to his takedowns. And if he does go for his takedowns, which we know he's going to do, Meerschaert has 23 career submissions on his record and 5 of them in the UFC. He's no joke. He's gotten them in all different ways. He's got arm bars, triangle, arm triangle, rear naked choke, front choke. There's all different types of submissions.
So he can grapple.
Yeah, it's not just like he's like, I've got this one go-to move like a guillotine and that's it, and I'm just going to jump guillotine every time. And he will get taken down. He will get control probably at some point here. But I do think that he finds a neck because it's out there.
Yeah, I think you've laid out a path for Meerschaert perfectly. And I do think that it is a very possible path. And I do think that there is value on that path. That being said, I get worried with Meerschaert for a couple reasons, and here's why. Meerschaert, before having a very good chin and not being knocked out until he fought Thiago Santos, has now been knocked out in back-to-back fights quickly. And I mean quickly. So I'm not saying that the knockout is a problem here, like that's something to worry about, but I am worried that he got knocked out in 80 seconds by Ian Heinich and 17 seconds one right cross from Chimaev and buckled. That is worrisome to some degree. And here's another stat. Since he has a bunch of UFC fights, I don't even know how many, it's like at least, is it 10?
12.
How many? 12. So he's got 12 UFC fights, 46% career takedown defense. That's abysmal. So when he's getting taken down by everybody, we know what Fibinski's going to do. Everybody does. But he still beat Darren Stewart. And I don't know where Meerschaert is in his career. I don't know where his chance, like, could he just, like, all Fabinski has to do is, which he's going to do, is keep shooting, trip Meerschaert, and he'd take him down, like, and then be on top. So, yeah, I can he catch Fabinski in, like, some crazy armbar or, like, yeah, it's possible. I'm not sure it's the most likely, but I do like it a lot. I do say, and I see a lot of, I don't know. I see a lot of value in it, both sides. I think maybe even a round three play, because Meerschaert has a ton of round three finishes, it looks like. I'm just looking at, he's got a win over Wynn in round three, a win over Giles in round three, Pechota at the end of round two. I see a win in Titan FC in round three. Anyway, he seems like a late kind of winner. Maybe weather the storm, Fabinski gets tired, and then catches him in that kind of.
Yeah, I mean, no one's ever, you know, I'm not professing this to be like the prettiest of fights out there, but as far as a couple of things I was researching in his grappling, because I was extremely concerned about the takedown numbers at first, but, you know, I started looking at the control numbers. About the time that's spent, you know, who's in the dominant position. So even though he's giving up these takedowns, you know, I'm seeing that in the Giles fight, he gives up 4 minutes of control, but he gets five. Hermanson, you know, that's a whole other level. So, you know, the 3 minutes control time, you know, you understand that, and he loses by sub. I can understand that one. That was a big step up. So 9 minutes of control time versus Kevin Holland, giving up four. Pechota, 3 minutes of control time, and GM3 gets two in the rear naked choke win. He has no problem working from the bottom. He has plenty of submission attempts, and he also gets a bunch of reversals. He even got one of those on Hermanson. So his last three losses have come to stand-up striking fights, two knockouts, and the Anders fight, there was only 1 minute of total control between the two guys for a 15-minute split decision, and Meerschaert loses even though he lands eight more strikes. So to me, I see a guy that even if he does get taken down, it's not that he just accepts bottom position. He's working for sweeps and reversals.
Yeah, he's certainly an active grappler. But what's Fabinski's control time percentage? Do you have that on hand?
Yeah. So Fabinski, when you look at his control, now keep in mind the names he's fighting. So you have Gareth McClellan, Hector Urbina, Emil Meek, and Prazer.
We talk about that a lot, but you can only fight who you can fight, and Emil Meek's a good striker.
Yeah, solid. So anyways, Fabinski has 11 minutes of control time against McClellan. He has 13 minutes of control time against Urbina, and he has 13 minutes of control time against Meek. However, he has two first-round submission losses in his last two fights. One to Prazeris, where he gets pieced up a little on the feet first, and then another to Muniz, where he falls into a guillotine attempt. And then instead of just working the guillotine, Muniz realizes he's not going to tap easily to it, so he throws up a triangle, and then he tricks him and gets it into an arm bar where he makes an adjustment. So, like, I get that that's like a crazy, you know, high-level grappling move, but at the same time, he started off with the guillotine and let it go even though he had it in deep.
What are the chances this guy loses by sub three times in a row?
I mean,
I guess kind of high.
He spends his entire time in control, and the two steps up that he's made, he's getting subbed.
Interesting. I really like it, and that's why I'm glad you're kind of maybe talking me back into it again.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not going to switch picks on you here. All right. I promise. You'll listen. I got Meerschaert earlier in the week at +290 by sub. Right now, we're sitting at +250.
Yeah, I listen. I like it. I even like it at +250. It's not the worst play.
No, as far as percentages, like if there's a way that Meerschaert's going to win, I mean, he could win a striking battle. He could go the distance or whatever. I just want to take the highest percentage chance.
Yeah, and if you love Fabinski, Fabinski decision all the way.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I don't think he's finishing him.
So that's that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that fight, though. That's a low-key fight that a lot of people probably don't know about. But when that comes on, I'm going to take a little extra sip of liquor. I'm gonna be ready.
Yeah, I know you're always looking for an excuse to get a little extra sippy in.
Hey, listen, when it's fight night, man, the gloves may be on for the fighters, but the gloves are off for me. All right.
Yeah, you definitely know how to get it popping. That's one thing that's for sure. Yeah, so anyways, Jessica Penne versus Lupi Godinez. This is going to be a very entertaining fight because we have Penne coming back off of a long layoff, and Godinez making her pretty short notice debut here. Man, I think that this might be a finish.
Listen, it's possible. I mean, who has Penne been finished by? We saw Penne finished by Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Who else?
And Jessica Andrade.
And
Michelle Waterson and Invicta.
All right. So, I mean, those are a pretty high level.
Yeah, back in 2013, 2015, and 2016, and then she's had this huge layoff.
Right. And she got relatively outstruck by Danielle Taylor in 2017, who's probably not as good a striker as Lupi.
And listen, I'm sorry, but her one UFC win comes against Randa Marcos, and it's a split decision.
Yeah. Listen, I applaud the girl from coming back. I know she had a huge USADA suspension that wasn't really her fault. It's definitely tough to make money these days, especially when you're in a UFC contract and all those kinds of things. I know she's on OnlyFans and, you know, I guess hats off to whoever's supporting that. I mean, I go for it.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, you get into like the bare bones here, where could Penne have an advantage? Like if it gets to the mat, she might be able to have an advantage, and she is going to be a little bigger, 3 inches taller, 4 inches reach, but she's 11 years older. And Godinez, she's feisty. She's a little crazy in there. And I just think, you know, I see her go up against bigger opponents normally. So it's not like she's not used to the size difference. She was 3-4-1 on her amateur record. So the 5-0 could be a little deceiving, but it's an amateur record for a reason. It seems like she had to get experience, but you could really see that inexperience off her back. So I would be interested if Penne is able to take her down. You know, maybe there's a live betting opportunity to be had. I'm not placing a pre-fight bet on Penne, but I'm not running out there to parlay Godinez. What I am looking to do, plus 500 for a knockout, yeah, I'll do like the babiest of sprinkles on that. That, you know, keep it light.
Yeah, listen, I certainly get it. By the way, two of those amateur losses were to the same person, so that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you're trying to get it back, but she didn't quite.
She didn't quite get it. I kind of like that Lupi sprinkle plus 500. Not a bad number at all. I do like that. I think the more likely play is Lupi by decision. I think that that's the more likely outcome. I think the smartest thing to do. In fact, I know the smartest thing to do. I know the smartest thing to do is
Stay away
from the fight.
If you got $5 to sprinkle, I mean, that you don't care
how
about losing.
You really get anything? It's a short notice call up for a girl that's just coming off an Invicta war with Vanessa Demopoulos. That fight was crazy.
That was crazy.
And Penne hasn't fought in 4 years. So pass.
Yeah, that's probably the best idea, but I will throw the little degenerate play out there just for some
100%. I like it. I like the degenerate play, and I'll probably be on Lupi, barring any crazy way and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Penne comes in and is, like, looking like she's trying to kill Lupi at the, you know, the stare down, and, like, and Lupi has, like, a really bad cut, and she doesn't look good because of her short notice. Like, yeah, okay, all bets are off.
Or no bets are on because we shouldn't be betting this fight.
Now, before we get to this next fight, let me just tell you, if I could sponsor a fighter out
there. If I could write you a song to make you fall in love, I would fall. All right, sorry.
But, you know, I feel like Alexander Romanov would be the funniest guy to sponsor. He's just like the biggest goofball out there. So I try to temper my expectations coming into this because, like, I was so excited to bet him in his first two fights. We got such favorable lines.
I think this is a chance that this could be another favorable line. I mean, I want to fade the hype, and I think the time to fade him is coming. I just don't know that it's now. And when I started the week, I was ready to be all on Espino. But after kind of doing a little bit deeper of a dive, I'm not super convinced. My favorite play for this, straight off the bat, is the over 1.5 minus 112.
Yeah,
I think it's going to take some time. I don't think anybody's just going to sleep super quick. Yeah, that's how I feel.
That's pretty simple and that's pretty straightforward. And I mean, it's hard to disagree. You saw Roque Martinez make it to the second round, and you saw De Lima almost make it to the second round but get choked out with the forearm. If you feel like you don't want to take the chance of those extra 2.5 minutes, you could just do fight to start round one. But yeah, I'm sorry. Fight to start round one. I think that cashes every
fight
time.
Fight to start round one. Man, I don't know what that line is, but I would take it.
Yeah, that's crazy. But anyways, fight to start round two is like -260. So maybe you don't want to quite do that. But yeah, I just think it could be really interesting because we're seeing two guys that have the very similar type of game plan. You know, Romanov 2-0 in the UFC, two submissions. Espino 2-0 in the UFC, two submissions. Romanov actually doesn't have a size advantage here. Espino going to be an inch taller, going to be 5 inches more reach. And got to imagine. 10 years
older.
Yeah, 10 years older. But you got to imagine the guy coming out of American Top Team. You know that they stay in shape down there. And he looks like he's in the best shape of his life. But he is coming off injuries.
Took 6 years off.
Yeah, it's really tough to like dig your heels in on a side here because like I've seen Romanov get a little tired going into the second round and he's still explosive and he's able to do a lot. But like what happens when he can't get a simple forearm choke on the guy or like, you know, Roki is holding his arms up in a guard, just asking to be put to sleep in a arm triangle choke. And it's like, it took him all the way into the second round to actually get that arm triangle. So
Roki is the epitome of high level MMA. Yeah. I will have nothing, no slander of the Martinez. What's his nickname? He's got a good nickname, doesn't he?
I don't even know, but like, yeah. So,
shout out Roki Martinez.
Yeah, the moral of the story, like, listen to those two names that we're talking about, two overblown light heavyweights. So now he's facing Juan Espino, a true heavyweight, someone that was in the Senegalese wrestling. You know, he was 7-0 there. He's a 17-0 amateur MMA record. He holds a bunch of grappling championship gold, silvers, bronzes. I mean, he's always been in, you know, competition. Canarian wrestling. He trained in Korea, jiu-jitsu. So it's not like – I know he doesn't have the most extensive professional MMA record, but it's not like Espino hasn't been part of combat sports for a very long time. And I could just see this as a place where Romanov might get...
Maybe doesn't get to finish this time and grind out a decision.
Yeah, so call me crazy. I call myself that all the time, so don't worry about offending me. But if you want to say, like, Romanov by points plus 480 or, you know, fight to go
plus
the distance...
Plus 480 for him by the way timeout. Him by decision is plus 480.
And to go the distance just in general is plus 225 if you don't want to sweat a greasy decision.
That's so – you have to play that. That's like an automatic play because you have to fade the narrative that this fight's going to be finished.
Yeah, because, okay, who's finishing who on the feet if anything happens? Juan Espino landed this crazy overhand right because he fakes a takedown. And, like, I think Romanov maybe has the more flexible hips and better kicks at this stage. But Espino, I saw his hands. They look pretty decent in the limited exposure.
Jeff Hughes.
No. Maurice Green, which is actually even funnier. But he knocked him down with an overhand
Maurice
right.
Maurice Green, Ben Sisoli. And before that, he beat a guy that was 1-0. And before that, he beat a guy named Yori, who's 12-40.
Yeah,
and 40.
But I also watched like a couple of his highlights from the Senegalese wrestling. He's facing these behemoths, and I know he was a little bit bigger back then, but I think he's used to big guys trying to grapple him, and he'll have a response, at least early. I don't think anything happens. You know, maybe Romanov sits on top of him, but, you know, him throwing these crazy double hammer fists, he's going to get reversed. You don't think Espino's not going for the ankle? Roque Martinez put Romanov in a heel hook in the first round, bro.
Yeah, I'm not. Remind me not to play Romanov any side at all. I want to just play the over.
Yes, the over. That's it. If you want to play it to go to the decision, if you're crazy,
I like over 1.5 still, minus 112.
That's great.
It's still not terrible.
That's a great line for that.
7 minutes. And 7 minutes in heavyweight MMA is going to feel like 3 hours.
Don't forget about those 30 seconds.
What 30 seconds?
7 minutes and 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, man. Yeah. Crazy shit happens.
What 30 seconds? Don't sound like an idiot.
But anyways, yeah. No, listen, like I really was thinking about playing Espino and I talked myself down off the ledge. But if I had to make a pick here, I think you almost have to fade the narrative and say that Espino might come away with this greasy decision if Romanov gasses out after one. He could have this crazy round one. But, yeah, I really like Romanov as a prospect. And if he wins this fight, my hype for him only goes up higher. And I'm just trying to quell my own hype here as well.
Yeah. And again, even if we see Romanov lay on top of him and choke him out, have we learned anything still?
No. I mean... Yes. Well, you learn that his grappling really is high level. That's what you learn.
High-ish level, beating a 40-year-old Juan Espino.
You're right. And if he comes in and just outbeefs him, we're going to be like, oh, he was so much bigger. How didn't we see that?
I
mean, like, yo, pending weigh-ins, if this dude is, like, a monster, I mean, like, all, you know. But he's a monster. We know he's a monster.
I'm betting the over.
Yeah, take the over.
If it goes under and somebody gets a freak finish, like, We know that, but so does the betting market. So I'm not paying that premium. You got to find where the value is, or don't play anything at all, which is another reason why this fight week. This, by the way, again, this is one of the fights I was looking most forward to. One of the toughest to really find a betting side.
Yeah, but yeah. So don't go throwing Romanov in any parlays. As much as I like him, as much as I probably will end up circling him for my official pick. You know, I wouldn't go ahead with that. So let's get on to our featured prelim, Tracy Cortez versus Justine Kish. And this might be a parlay piece.
Oh, definitely. She's a dime piece too, but that's a whole nother separate conversation.
So, I mean, listen, this fight is going to be a huge step up and a big challenge for Cortez as far as someone that's going to come prepared to fight and make her work for it. Because I don't think you just come out there and you know, just intimidate Kish with your forward movement. I don't think you're going to be able to just not move your head on your entries and just get easy takedowns. I think you're going to have to come in with a little bit more of a game plan. Shout out to Schwan. We were talking a little earlier on Twitter. He was saying that, which is something I completely agreed with. I had to get in the conversation with him that, you know, Kish is you know, definitely athletic. She's going to make it a challenge for Cortez. And if Cortez doesn't show improvement in her striking and throwing combinations, you know, body head, you know, really opening stuff up for her in that regard and using some head movement to avoid some strikes, you know, this could look a lot closer than you would really like if you're on the Cortez side here. However, I just don't see Kish winning more than one round.
You've said everything perfectly, except I would like to add, I think that Tracy Cortez has continued to make adjustments at her camp at Fight Ready, and she's going to come out and show improved striking. She's at her much more natural weight class. I think this is as close to I hate that, and I sometimes do too, but this is probably as close to a setup fight as you can really get. Justine Kish, as much as I like her, she doesn't really have much finishing threat, and we've seen her get dominated and just be unable to move from being on bottom. You know, she infamously and unfortunately shit her pants trying to get up from Felice Herring. So that's funny and unfortunate, but it happens. But it shows how tough she was, you know, straining to get up. So I think if Tracy Cortez can get it to the ground, she's going to be all right. And I think eventually she will.
Completely agreed. As far as a play here, I'm probably just going to use her in a nice big parlay, probably two or three legs total. Once I end up making my final selections here, as far as like the big favorites.
You stole my thunder a little bit.
Ooh, shit.
And she's a part of my official parlay. That is, I think, my best bet of the week.
All right,
this is
drop
this
it.
Is
hey,
such you, a tough week. This is yeah. my best. This is my best bet parlay. Probably means it's good. Both legs will miss, but Cortez money line is part of that. So,
all right. Well, hey, that's nice to have a nice setup here. We're gonna see this other leg coming up soon. Otherwise, if you're looking for a little prop, Cortez by decision -120. Very tough to finish Kish, and without the stand-up, I don't think Cortez does it. So let's get right along to the main card here. Very exciting fight, Luis Pena versus Alexander Munoz. This is going to be a high-level grappling match when things get down to it. And, you know, we're going to see a huge size discrepancy here. That's another thing that really caught my eye when I started scouting this fight. Pena, 6'3", 76-inch reach, and Munoz, 5'9", 73-inch reach. It's going to be a little bit tough for this guy to get some wrist control, I'm thinking. However, really high-level grappler, the head coach for wrestling at Team Alpha Male, Alex Munoz. Luis Pena recently made the move from AKA to American Top Team. I think that was getting him a little bit closer to home. And I think they have a little bit better stable for him to work with, given, you know, his talents and abilities. I'm really excited to see how this fight plays out because I'm not so sure that I have a real play here on a side, just that, you know, I think the price is pretty fair.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with everything that you've said. This is such a tough fight. One of the best ones on the card. We see Dracar Close coming in when he was... We see... We see Luis Pena coming in when he was supposed to be fighting Dracar Close just a couple weeks ago, in a fight that I was also very excited to see. Pena, who's got the recent loss to Karma Worthy, his 47% takedown defense is kind of troubling to me against Munoz, who is a two-time state champion in wrestling. Not necessarily an All-American, but still wrestling champ. He's got a durable chin. Obviously, the solid grappling. He won on the Contender Series versus Nick Newell. I believe he said he had a tough time finding fights and fought a decent fight against Nazareth Haxparast, where he lost by unanimous decision. And honestly, isn't Nazareth way higher level than anybody Pena's even fought?
That's a pretty fair point.
So I don't know. I love Pena as a person. I love his look. I love how active he is on social media. But he's constantly like a favorite and doesn't. He's 3-3 in the UFC. So I think that while he's really tall and rangy, like, does he really fight like that? Does he John Jones it and use his awesome length and reach to his advantage? Or does he make fights close and spend a lot of time on the ground? And I'm not doing it. I'm just not laying the wood. So I'm on Alex Munoz money line +128 or by decision +260.
Yeah, I was actually just thinking as you're going through this, like, wow, that +260 seems pretty interesting. So I don't think Pena is getting finished here. But as far as wrestling goes in control time, we could see a lot of that. And Pena goes for some unorthodox, like, hookups on the ground, using, like, his, you know, like, rubber guard and then connecting his arm. Like, he's got such long limbs, he's able to do some crazy stuff as far as control goes. But will he be able to get a lot of reversals here? It's going to be tough. He's definitely coming in great shape, but he did just make a weight cut not too long ago when his fight got canceled. So, you know, for a really tall guy like that, you know, if he's even sapped a little bit of his strength, damn, man, I think you got me going on to the Munoz side here following you. I came in a little bit unsure, but that just might be an underdog play.
Yeah, I can't do it. I can't pull the trigger on it. And I feel bad because I really like the guy, but I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, and you know what? That's probably...
It feels like one of those fights that I would always pick this guy and I wouldn't do the full research into the other guy and I would just chalk it up and I lose a greasy decision. Like, I'm not going to be that guy this time. I'm going to take the money and I'm going to try to take the technique. Like, yeah, that's it.
This next one is pretty straightforward.
Straightforward part.
Abdul Razak Al Hassan versus Jacob Malkoon, training partner.
I'm sorry, who?
You know, as we get all excited here about who, you know, people are, you know, training with, you got to remember sometimes people could just be punching bags. But all right, so there's, if you want the degenerate angle here, here's the degenerate angle. You know, Alhassan is minus 290, probably for very good reason. Seeing Malkoon crumple from Hawes, you know, after just one punch wasn't so ideal. You know, minus 140 for a knockout, that's really not that bad. And if you're looking at knockout in round one, plus 135, if Alhassan's going to win, that's all of his wins. We're first-round knockouts. However, if you're like, oh, well, things, you know, might change here, you want to fade the narrative, will the fight go the distance at plus 220? All right. I mean, like, I know I was excited about the Romanov one and all. I'm not as excited about that.
That's really,
you got to give me, like, plus 500 to want to be excited about this one going the distance here.
So, as we said, this is Alhassan's middleweight debut, or at least his middleweight UFC debut.
Yes, moving up. I did not mention that. Good call.
So that's that extra weight, that extra 15 pounds, while it's going to help him since he obviously missed weight in his last two fights. I don't know that you can feel confident betting on him. Honestly, I'm going to ask the other way. How could you feel confident betting on him up a weight class? I don't see it. And then Jacob Malkoon, we haven't seen anything from this guy at all.
Stay away.
Like, not for nothing, is Jacob Malkoon Man from last week? Like what was that guy's name? What's that guy's name?
Georges.
What did I say? I said it on the podcast. I said, would I be surprised if Georges Donhill came away with a win? And guess what? He starched Jorgen in the first fucking round. Malkoon? So that's crazy. So are you telling me that after seeing 6 seconds or 10 seconds of Jacob Malkoon in his last outing versus 13 seconds versus Phil Hawes, we saw nothing? So he could actually come out and be a decent fighter, or he could have come out and be complete trash.
Listen, he gets his grappling work in. You know, he is a brown belt, and he does work with Whitaker for camp. So it's not that he's not getting grappling.
That's the only thing that we know, that he rode Whitaker's coattails the whole way here, and that he went 18 seconds versus Phil Hawes. Sorry, I did not have that pulled up.
No, that's all good. And he's 4-1 overall in his career. I mean, he's 3-0 in boxing, 2-0 amateur. That's not a lot of experience.
All right. And Alhassan missed weight and gassed out in both the Muneer Lizaz fight and the Chaos Williams fight. And the Chaos Williams fight, it made him pay out quicker.
Yo, tell me something. If Alhassan misses weight this week, I think I would die on the spot.
No, he's not going to miss weight.
Yo, come on. That would be the funniest thing.
So it would be hysterical. What are the odds on him missing weight?
Oh, God. I mean, you got to imagine. Anyways, so I think it's pretty clear.
This is a stay away spot. The only spot I do like. All right. So the only spot I do like, since I'm a complete degenerate, is the under 1.5 minus 142. That's it. Because if you like either of these fighters, you think they finish each other. That's it.
That's fair. You know, follow that one at your own risk. Like we said, stay away.
If you need a play, Alhassan into stuff, he's an apple pie shitter if I've ever seen one.
So we got Andre Arlovsky facing Chase Sherman. Arlovsky making the short notice appearance here after being absolutely pummeled by one of my favorites, Aspinall. I don't know how much he's really, ready to get back in there. Like, it's 6 weeks later, right?
And 6 weeks.
I know he got choked out and he like tapped really quick, but like the dude was getting pummeled. Like he was up against the cage. Like it wasn't quite as bad as the Olenek knockout, but like it wasn't, you know, necessarily nice if you're a member of Arlovsky's family to watch that one. So you see him here as the favorite, minus 126 right now. Sherman might be heading over to flipping over to the favorite. He's a plus 108. Seems like money has been coming in on him. And man, I really think that Sherman, you know, he's got a little bit of a size advantage. Arlovsky's had difficulty dealing with bigger fighters recently. His two most recent wins over Bozer and Linz, over guys that, you know, weren't quite his size, and he was able to use some technical advantages. I just think Sherman's going to come in with these big leg kicks and be able to kind of get in his face and make some stuff happen. But Man, I learned my lesson when I was heavy on Boser, and I'm a little bit afraid to make a play against Arlovski because he just feels like that guy that's going to pull off the decision, you know? And yeah.
I'm just about to say, Arlovski loves that greasy decision win. So Arlovski by decision is plus 170, and I really don't hate that. But that being said, something I heard CJ Saftik point out, so I'll give him that credit because he's awesome. Arlovski for 11 straight fights was the underdog. This fight, he's now the favorite. And to me, that's kind of sketchy.
It's extremely sketchy. And I just, I don't have a strong play as far as who I really want here or the side. But what I do feel good about is the fact that I don't think that it's going to be a really fast finish. But you're looking at an over 2.5 at minus 142.
Yeah, nobody.
At that point, I mean, why not play, will the fight go to the distance? No, at minus 110.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly think that a Sherman decision prop is honestly so greasy. Plus 420.
420. Ooh.
So I think that that's greasy too. Honestly, the best thing I see is what did this fight open at? Because Chase Sherman plus 108 seems like a little bit of a dip from where it opened. Wasn't it a little bit wider?
Yeah, it was. He was in the plus like 120 something range, I think. Orlovsky more minus 150. Now it's minus 126.
If you can still get Sherman plus money, I would take that. Such a tough fight.
I would like to make sure that Sherman's actually going to be bigger than Arlovski, too. I really want to see that at the weigh-in. I think that's important if you want to
play
him. Total
weigh-in face-off vibes. Sherman by KO plus 230 is almost sounds egregious, honestly. Actually, that being said, no, it's not, because the last two people to knock him out were only Rozenstruik and Ngannou, and I feel like I've said that a million times, but he doesn't really get knocked out that much. I mean, he almost got knocked out by Aspinall. Pretty much was a knockout. That's the problem. He took a lot of damage in that fight, too.
Yeah, and, you know, Sherman probably hits a little bit harder, I would say, when he's, like, really unleashing. Aspinall's a little more controlled.
Really on the juice.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Oh, wow, yeah. So coming off USADA suspension, like, that's tough. Like, where's he going to be at completely? Because, like, you know, he needed to get that win coming back in the UFC. They determined it was like from before when he was in the testing pool. So yeah, like it was fine, but like
whatever.
They didn't take away his win, but like, I don't know. It's a little sketchy still.
Super sketchy. You know, took the Ike Villanova fight on short notice, but whatever. I don't know. I think I'll be sure circling Chase Sherman.
But. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably where I'm ending up here.
Probably not betting this fight either. Like I said, this card is so tough to bet, I felt.
So here we go. The co-main event of the evening. We have Jeremy Stephens, 15-17 in the UFC, coming in against Strucker Close, 5-2 in the UFC, and 6 of his 7 fights have gone to decision. Jeremy Stephens is going to size up pretty well, but he's moving back up to 155. So that's definitely a big adjustment. However, I did like to hear that he's off the sauce now. So, you know, he should be coming in really good shape.
Alcohol on the body definitely takes its toll. So it's good to, you know, keep that out of training or, you know, really keep that out of your lifestyle, especially if it's impacting it negatively. So I would like to see how Jeremy Stephens looks on the scale. Obviously, he missed weight in that Calvin Kattar fight by like 4 pounds and weighed in first, and that really pissed Calvin off. And it pissed me off too, honestly.
Yeah.
But I get it from both sides. Jeremy Stephens has only lost to the absolute like best, forgetting the Moicano fight. But I mean, he's lost to just some of the biggest and best names in all the sport. So, I don't know. Jeremy Stephens may not have the record of a UFC Hall of Famer, but he's like built the roads that other people have taken to the Hall of Fame, if that makes any sense. I see the guys standing at range a lot, and I see a lot of leg kicks. Close doesn't have really any finishing power, which is where Stephens
would hope his best chance to victory would be, you know, finishing Drakkar close. But I don't know that he can do it here. His last finish was against Josh Emmett, which is also, I guess, his last win. And the Josh Emmett fight, we all know, should have been a DQ because that was awful. Poor Josh Emmett. But it's super close. That's a pun. I'm so excited to watch this fight. And I do lean close by decision, plus 190. And I guess that would mean I lean Drakkar close at Moneyline plus 100. But I don't know. You could easily find me on Jeremy Stephens. And you could easily find me on Jeremy Stephens by decision. I don't know what that number is at the moment, but I like that number.
So I want to avoid playing a side here. My official play for this fight is going to be to go to the distance and minus 112.
Fuck. That's what that number is? To go the distance is minus 112?
Yeah, give me that.
Yeah.
Stevens doesn't really get finished unless it's the best of the best. I think he overstepped against Cater, got caught by an elbow he never knew was coming. But he won the first round.
I do love that.
And he did win the last round against Rodriguez after getting 10-8'd in the first round. So he has resiliency. I don't think he gets easily finished here. And this being a three-round fight for Stevens, I don't think he has a ton of power as much as he sells out for it. And Close does have some defensive tendencies. I don't like Close's takedown defense. I don't like that he grabs the fence all the time.
I don't like that
he grabs inside the gloves all the time. Like, I feel like he's always doing some sort of stuff, but like, you know that he's trying to do everything he can to win.
One of the very few notes that I actually wrote was, and that go off my head for, was that he's a super middling fighter. He's just very middling, Drakkar Close. There's nothing super impressive about him. And Stevens has made a career off being exciting. So I don't know. I think it could be tough. We've seen Close have a tough chin, so I do like your to go the distance play minus 112, but yeah, it's going to be 15 minutes of nail biting.
I don't disagree with that because we could see a finish come at any point. You don't know where Close's chin is at. You don't know where Stevens' chin is at after his last knockout, but I just think given their history and given their tendencies here that we could see it go a little bit further. And geez, if we see some grappling, yeah, that's what we want because neither of these guys are getting a finish on the mat. There's a reason it's plus 1600 and plus 2600. But they could both wrestle. So yeah, we can see a lot of time wrestle. Being wasted.
That's why I think it kind of negates a little bit and it stays more at the distance.
But, yeah, but these guys, once again, coming off knockouts, might be looking to switch up their game a tiny bit. So, let's finish that off. Minus 112 to go the distance for me.
Wow. You know what? That tentative plays even more into your play.
Yeah, you see it all the time, guys coming back from knockouts. So now that we did that,
I like that.
Let's get on to our main event of the evening. Kelvin Gastelum stepping up short notice, found out that, you know, we weren't going to be able to get Costa, you know, Mr. Wine himself, Bohachina, versus Robert Whittaker, but Robert Whittaker said, you know what, I'll take whoever steps up to the plate here. I'll take Kelvin Gastelum. This fight was supposed to happen a while ago, like we said. This is exciting.
Whittaker is a true champion, one of my absolute favorite fighters, which makes breaking down his fight so much more difficult because you have to stay as far away, emotion reserved as you can. But he's, you know, other than like the McGregors, you know, he's really one of the guys that brought me into the sport. I've really enjoyed watching him.
And he really is a stand-up guy.
Just an all-around unbelievable personality, kind of infectious with his humor, just a good dad and a good guy. I've talked a lot about Whittaker being a good person, but that doesn't mean Gastelum's not a good person either. He's a mama's boy, and he comes from a tough upbringing. He's a kind of a likable character too. I know he gets a lot of clowned on for being a little bit of a thick boy, but
hey, thick boy lifestyle. Come on,
but we all enjoy food, man. So I get it. And he comes from that, you know, rich heritage, and he's a scrapper, man, and he's a grinder. And I really respect his camp, MMA Kings. I respect the shit out of Rafael Cordero. So I really tried to approach this fight as surgically as possible. And of course I came down to the fact that this, goddamn, it's a fucking tough fight. The line is, I think, a little wide. I believe that it's kind of similar to what the line was set a little over 2 years ago for their original fight. I don't think that Gastelum has done enough to show me why I should bet on him. Maybe at this price I should, but again, one win over the newly in the top 15, Ian Heinich, who tried to wrestle him, and which is not a good idea, by the way, and got tired. And Kelvin was tired after round three. Sucking win, like, not like exhausted, but like definitely happy the fight was over. Definitely tired. Whereas Whitaker, I mean, he has put down some, I mean, he put down Darren Till by just, I mean, not put him down, but he beat handedly Darren Till. He beat handedly Jared Cannonier. Jared Cannonier still on the shelf. So I really find myself liking Whitaker. I don't think he gets the finish. I do know that Kelvin has a blockhead. So I know that he's tough. I know that he's going to make it a tough fight. If I had to put a bet just on this fight, it would be Whitaker round 4-5 decision minus 110. And I'll talk out the cap of my parlay piece after I let you break down this fight a little bit.
No, definitely. So, I mean, looking at the matchup, I would be most worried about Gastelum getting an early finish. If anything, you see Whitaker getting knocked down and dropped early, obviously twice against Adesanya. Then you see him, you know, having those wars with Romero. You know, it's very tough for his body to hold up, and he took a lot of time off. You know, that Cannonier fight, you know, he very handily won that. But yeah, it did come, you know, with a little bit of a cost. You know, see him get tagged at the end of round three. Not that he's fallen down or anything, but he takes a shot. You know, Darren Till, he gets knocked down early, you know, round one.
Yeah, with that elbow. But elbow. I mean, for me, it's the elbow soul is going to sell me the same way it sold me versus Cannonier. And I believe I was on Whitaker, and I believe you were on Cannonier, which I was on Cannonier all week until I switched. The elbow shows me that, like, he's durable, that his chin is there. Sure, it'd be great to just be the Hulk or Ngannou and just do body shot challenge and not flinch. But we watched him eat a hard elbow, get back up, keep fighting, and win the fight.
Yeah, and he didn't see it coming, and he got right back up. So as opposed to Till, who gets dropped and then controlled for a little bit and some elbows on ground and pound, yeah, it's very different.
These guys are, like, basically the same age. Like, so as much fight experience as Whitaker has, Kelvin has also been through plenty of wars, i.e. the Israel Adesanya fight, one of the best fights, one of the craziest fights ever. Gastelum has made a name beating old vets.
But he definitely used a lot of, you know, we see his wrestling background, but he did fall in love with his hands a little bit, right? I believe you told me that a little bit earlier in the week.
Definitely fallen in love with his hands. And I think this is a fight, again, where he could fall in love with his hands. I think you can totally get lulled into that because of the way Whitaker strikes.
Yeah, but
you don't want to wrestle with Whitaker. We know Whitaker can wrestle.
No, I think that if you're Gastelum, you do want to clinch him up a little bit and wear on him because, you know, Whitaker, he does have great defensive wrestling. He just got his black belt, I believe, in jiu-jitsu. He does have a karate black belt, Aikido as well. And he won a gold medal at the Australian National Wrestling Championship. So he's got a diverse background. He should be able to fight no matter where it goes. The things that stand out to me are that Gastelum's heavy on the lead leg, but he has some really solid jabs. He puts them together with the hook and the overhand to close the distance because, you know, he's going to need to close the distance.
That's the other thing, though. I feel like he used to do a much better job of disguising that jab, and which would then set up that jab that he would use that jab to set up the takedowns, and I feel like he did a much better job of disguising that. Whereas nowadays, it seems like all his shit is like telegraphed, and you kind of know where it's coming from.
Yeah, and, but I think he'll resort to grinding because I don't think he necessarily gets dropped early.
And listen, I'm sure he was out of camp or whatever, but the video on Tough of Robert Whittaker and Kevin Gastelum running a 5K for their guys, for their and gals in that season. And they have to run a 5K in the heat. And Kelvin, I don't even know if he finished, but I mean, he's puking. I mean, it's terrible. And Whittaker's like, he's tired, man, but he could do this for his career. Like, he could be a long distance runner. Like, if that was his other job, like, you just see the difference of the athletes. You see the high level of Whittaker's fight IQ, whereas sometimes I think Kelvin is maybe a bit of a hothead and maybe doesn't have as much of as the fight IQ. I think that totally is in Whittaker's favor. And I think he gets it done. That brings me to my parlay. Tracy Cortez, money line. And the fight to start round four. This fight to start round four and Tracy Cortez money line plus 106. I mean, we're going three rounds. We're getting to the championship rounds of this fight. I don't see how we don't. I don't see how.
That's that sounds like your play of the night.
Yeah, I really like that. I mean, if you want to go a little bit lighter, you can go for the round to for the fight to start round three and you get minus 126. But no, I really like that. And I also really like my Whittaker round 4-5 or decision play minus 110, because I do feel confident we get into championship rounds. And I think Whittaker could possibly get the finish in those later rounds, but I think it goes the distance. I think it goes to decision. I guess you could play the over. What was the over? Minus 4.5, what was it, over 4.5 minus 127 or something?
Yeah, it's tough. To me, if you're playing that, you might as well just play it to go to decision minus 128. Or for me, I'm playing Whittaker plus 135 by decision. That's my play.
You're officially on Whittaker, because I felt a lot of Gastelum, and I know you're kind of his twin. So
definitely a doppelganger going on over here. I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's going to make this a grind, going to make it a really tough fight. Kevin Gastelum. Give him a shine. Come on. I'm a good looking dude, right? You got to take the better, more well-rounded fighter. But the grit that Gastelum brings, we're not going to see him thrown up in the octagon. And he's going to come in.
How excited I am for this fight. I mean, we went through a whole season of Tough. I know you weren't the biggest fan around that standpoint, but went through the whole season of Tough. We get to fight day in February, and I remember the fight being canceled on fight day. I'm like, what? How? I was like literally worried for Rob because he was rushed emergency surgery. So to finally get this fight 2 years later, I am just so, so excited. I'm honestly more excited for this main event. I'll be very excited next week, don't get me wrong, but I'm more excited for this Whittaker fight than for the Masvidal Usman or the two other championship fights next week. I this fight is the bee's knees for me personally.
I don't blame you at all. So to just give you a quick rundown of where we ended up on our picks, like to just, you know, make it a little easier here because you know, we could get a little long-winded at times, but that's quite all right. That's why you guys like us, right? Conversations. So Tony Gravely going to be a parlay piece. I'm going to be putting him together with Robert Whittaker. Money line, and I am also going to be putting him together with Tracy Cortez. So we had Whittaker, Cortez, and Gravely, nice and spread out along the card to follow your parlay. Then we had Stevens and Close to go to decision. If you want to prop Robert Whittaker by decision, I also liked as far as straight plays, we had Gerald Meerschaert. You might want to take a straight play if he's still, you know, like plus 120, somewhere around there. If not, I played the submission. And finally, you know, Juan Espino and Alexander Romanov to go to decision.
Absolutely.
So I'll go through my quick plays. I have my big parlay of Cortez moneyline and the fight to the main event to start round four, +106. Whitaker round four, five, or decision -110. Under 1.5 in Al Hassan and Malkoon -142. I really, really like, because I don't really like that play at all. I really like Alex Munoz, moneyline +128, decision +260. Both are nice. And I also thought I liked the over 1.5 -112 Romanov Espino. I feel good about that. And I do really like your Gravely plays as well.
Yeah, I think I will stick Gravely decision in there as well, +195.
No reason not to like that.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to, you know, really just settling in, enjoying this one. And yeah, we got three title fights next week, and there's going to be some fans back there. And I don't know how I necessarily feel about that, but there will be some energy, and we're going to have it no matter what I think about it. So we might as well enjoy it.
Is it fans back this week or is it next
week? No. I was saying next week.
Yeah, I thought it was next week.
Yeah,
next week, fans. I know I'm excited for the atmosphere. You know, I'm just going to put the whole politics and public health safety risk aside. I'm very excited for the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's going to happen. So, you know, the atmosphere is going to be there. That's it.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Thanks so much for tuning in with us. I know that this was a little bit long-winded. We broke down a lot, tried to get to the nitty gritty of this. And I think sometimes it's more important to flesh out like why you're not betting something as opposed to even why you are betting something sometimes. Thanks so much for tuning in with us, everybody. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel and throw our videos a like at Chronic Combat Conversations. We're out on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts now. So feel free to give us a 5-star rating and subscribe to us there. So when our pods are released, you get them right away. Please follow our Twitter at Chronic Combat and our Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can follow my awesome co-host at TB Scouting MMA on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. And you can find me, the_MMA Guru on Instagram, Twitter, Verdict, and Tapology. Thanks everybody so much. We'll see you next week for UFC 261.